Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening Post for Politics, Iowa style,
where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capitol, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us on this week before Christmas and this Hanukkah week. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin, of the blog site Leading Heartland. Welcome again, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Laura, unbelievably enough for you and me, this is our 99th broadcast, our 99th Capital Week since we first went on the air on February 1st of last year. Can you believe that?
It has gone quickly.
Well, tonight we're going to take a look back at what we said on that very first broadcast, see how smart we really were or otherwise. What in the world were we talking about back then, February 1st, 2021? But first, let's go over this past week's political news. Boy, there was a lot of that. Normally, we focus, of course, on Iowa, but tonight we're going to start in the nation's capital, where the House committee looking into the insurrection there in January 2021 voted to make criminal referrals against former President Donald Trump to the Justice Department on this Monday. Laura, take it from there.
Yes, it was the last televised hearing of the House Select Committee on January 6th, and they walked through some of their findings and the key findings, and Jamie Raskin, who is a constitutional law professor, talked about the four crimes that they are recommending that President Trump and others, and they didn't name all the others. One was John Eastman, but they didn't name everybody, but obstructing an official proceeding. That was the Electoral College count that was obstructed. Conspiring to defraud the United States. That is related to the fake electors. Conspiring to make a false statement. Various aspects of what happened on January 6th there. And the last one, inciting, assisting, or aiding in an insurrection. And if someone is convicted on that count, that person would be ineligible to hold office ever again.
Something like this has never happened before in the history of the country.
Yes, and it has not happened. And again, it is just a referral. It doesn't mean that Donald Trump or anybody else will definitely be charged, but it is significant, and there is a huge amount of evidence that federal prosecutors will be sifting through.
So the committee also referred four House GOP members to the Ethics Committee for refusing to testify.
Yes, and there was a fifth who also refused their subpoena, but they didn't refer him because he's retiring, Mo Brooks. He did not seek re-election. So Annie Biggs of Arizona, Jim Jordan of Ohio, Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, and Kevin McCarthy of California, they were all very involved in the goings-on January 6th. Kevin McCarthy spoke with Donald Trump several times during the day. Others were involved. Scott Perry was involved in the effort to get fake electors from Pennsylvania, but they refused to talk to the committee about any of that.
So as we approach the end of this year, we're in the holiday weeks now, here we go, promising with this action today to just explode politics in the first weeks of 2023. It is not going to be fun on Capitol Hill.
No, but it could be very slow. I mean, the Justice Department doesn't always move quickly on something like this. And I heard some legal experts speaking today after the hearing saying that one thing that the federal prosecutors may be doing right now is trying to flip some of the lower level Trump administration officials and trying to figure out who they can get to give evidence against the people higher up on the food chain.
And in connection with this, last week, Doug Jensen was sentenced for capital insurrection. He's the Iowa man who took part in that insurrection in January 2021.
Yes, he was one of the most recognizable faces of the insurrection. There was a very widely circulated newswire service photo of him wearing a giant Q t-shirt. And also he was in a video that went viral that a reporter was able to take on the steps as a Capitol Police officer was going backwards up the steps, and Doug Jensen was leading the crowd of people trying to push ahead. And that officer, Eugene Goodman, actually led them away from the Senate chamber, which still had not been secured at that time.
Prosecutors had called Jensen during his trial the rioter who would not back down. And the judge told Jensen he had played a leading role in egging the mob forward.
Yes, as I said, if you look at the video footage from that day, he really is one of the top faces that you can recognize. And there were a lot of people in those hallways, but he was at the forefront.
And last week, another Iowan pleaded guilty in connection with that same Capitol insurrection. Her name, Deborah Sandoval. She's from Des Moines.
Yes, and this is a much less serious charge. It's entering a restricted building. A number of the people who have been charged in connection with the events of January 6th were able to plead down to charges like that.
Meanwhile, back in Iowa, last weekend, the chairman of the state Democratic Party said he would step down. His name is Ross Wilburn, and he is stepping down after a really bad cycle for Democrats.
It was very difficult. Ross Wilburn, his political career is not over. He still represents part of Ames in the Iowa House, and he will remain there. But the Iowa House Democratic caucus is somewhat diminished from where it's been a few years ago. But it was, as you say, a very difficult election cycle for Democrats. And I don't think anybody was surprised that Ross Wilburn was not planning to seek another term. I don't think that the state central committee of the Iowa Democratic Party probably would have been inclined to elect him to another term as state party chair. That is the group of people, the party activists, who will choose. It's not something that goes to a broad vote among rank and file Democrats around the state.
And it's a difficult position. You wonder who would want the job.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard about anybody publicly. I've been asking around if anybody is sounding out some possible candidates, but nobody has thrown their hat in. Compared to after 2016, quite a few people announced publicly fairly soon after the election that they were going to compete to become the state party chair. And I think it might be a job that not many people want right now, especially with the Iowa caucuses probably not happening on the Democratic side, at least not in the same way we're used to.
Now, following up on a story we talked a lot about last week, President Biden signed into law the Respect for Marriage Act, and that's enshrining federal recognition of same-sex and interracial marriages into federal law for the first time. Now, we talked about it a lot last week because Joni Ernst, Republican Iowa U.S. Senator, came under intense fire for voting in favor of that law.
Yes, she did. And I just wanted to mention that President Biden did invite some Iowans to the signing ceremony, including C.J. Peterson, who was a former candidate for the Iowa Senate and serves on the state central committee, a prominent LGBTQ activist and Democrat from rural Iowa. He and his husband were there for the bill signing. Yes, Senator Joni Ernst has been criticized for this. She, in her public statements, has been trying to emphasize other issues that she's working on, but she did say in a press call last week that she stands by this vote, that she felt that it would just preserve the status quo. But several county Republican committees are strongly dominated by social conservative activists, and they are not happy about it.
Also last week, Senator Grassley was asked by somebody, some reporter, who he would endorse, if he would endorse anybody, before the Iowa caucuses. Republicans, of course, are going to continue, they say, holding the first in the nation caucuses for their party. Democrats say they will not. Well, he had an answer, but his answer came after the GOP Central Committee had already passed a motion saying nobody should endorse anybody, basically.
That's right. Chuck Grassley typically does not endorse before the Iowa Republican caucuses. He's only done it a couple of times in his long career. And usually the state party apparatus, I mean, they have an interest in everybody coming here and campaigning. Nobody wants it to look like the fix is in and the Republican Party of Iowa is all behind one candidate, because they want everybody out there pounding the pavement, spending money, hiring staff, headlining fundraisers for local Republican groups. So it's in everybody's interest. But I think even without that resolution of the Iowa GOP State Central Committee, I think Chuck Grassley probably wasn't going to endorse anybody before the caucuses. He didn't before the 2016 caucuses.
And there was a question raised on another matter last week about Iowa 1st Congressional District member Marionette Miller Meeks, Republican. Did she put herself in some kind of legal jeopardy? Let's try to download that one.
This was a shocking story to me. You may remember when we discussed the redistricting, when the new map was approved, Miller Meeks' home in Ottumwa, that's Wapello County, was not in the new 1st Congressional District that makes up most of Southeast Iowa. It was placed in the new 3rd District. So to no one's surprise, Marionette Miller Meeks announced that she was going to run for re-election in the 1st District. And she actually doesn't have to be living there. Under the U.S. Constitution, you just have to be a resident of the state. You don't have to be a resident of the U.S. House District where you're on the ballot, but it's customary for people to move. Dave Loebsack and Tom Latham, who are both members of Congress, they both moved in 2011 after the redistricting. So she had indicated that she was going to stay in her Ottumwa home, but that she had also had a second residence in Scott County in the town of LeClaire. And I didn't look into where this residence was, but Pat Reinert of Iowa Starting Line broke the news last Wednesday that where Representative Miller Meeks registered to vote shortly before the election was at her friend's home, State Senator Chris Knoyer, who represents part of Scott County in the Iowa Senate. And I was just stunned by this because I had assumed that Miller Meeks would have rented an apartment somewhere. That's normally what somebody would do, either buy a second residence or rent an apartment or condo in the new district. And that's not what she did.
Okay, so what kind of jeopardy could she possibly be in here?
Well, if you look at the Iowa voter registration form, it says at the bottom that on penalty of perjury that you swear or affirm the following things. I'm a U.S. citizen, I'm at least 17 years old, and so on. And one of the things is I live at the address listed above. And then next to that, it even says that if you knowingly say something that's not true on this form, that you could be subject to criminal prosecution and a fine of more than $10,000 and up to 5 years in prison. It's a Class D felony. So that alone, registering at an address where you don't live, if Representative Miller Meeks doesn't actually live at her friend's house, that in itself would be a crime, whether or not she cast a ballot. Also, it's not clear whether she voted. The Scott County Auditor's Office would not confirm to reporters whether she cast a ballot. She did film a video on Twitter the day before the election that made it seem like she had just voted early. She said anyway that she had just voted for the Republican ticket and for the pro-gun constitutional amendment, but that could potentially be vote fraud as well as voter registration fraud and possibly perjury if in fact she doesn't live at her friend's house. And neither her office nor Senator Knoyer has responded to me or to other journalists with any kind of evidence suggesting that she lives there. For instance, does she receive mail there? Are there utility bills in her name that arrive at the house? Or is there some kind of a rental agreement? Is she paying? Does she have her own dedicated living space there? Those kinds of things, they haven't provided any information about that.
In another story last week, Governor Reynolds banned the use of TikTok. Yes, TikTok, on all state-owned devices. What do we make of that?
I think this is just symbolic. I mean, most people who are using TikTok are using it on their private phones. I don't know how many people have state-issued devices that they probably shouldn't be doing TikTok on those. But if there are any government entities, state entities that have TikTok accounts, the governor just banned that. But this seems to be a trend now with Republican politicians around the country posturing about TikTok because saying that it's Chinese spyware. And in fact, some people even want to ban it outright. Representative Ashley Hinson, who represents the northeast part of Iowa, welcomed the governor's announcement and said that she would like to see TikTok banned, not just on government-owned devices, but on all devices.
But the only TikTok I know about is the ticking of the clock, and it's ticking to 13 after the hour. Wherever you're listening to us, you're in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on here in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We're here every week at this time to talk about politics Iowa style and how it's affecting all of us. Moving on, as we predicted would happen, Iowa now expected to take in slightly less revenue in the current fiscal year than it did last year and the same amount in 2024. All of this because of tax cuts.
That's right. The tax cuts are starting to kick in. They kick in for the higher income levels first. So this is the personal income. Anybody making more than $75,000 a year is going to have a slight income tax cut. And as the years go on, other people in the lower tax brackets are also going to have a slight cut until everybody is paying 3.9% in personal income tax. There are other corporate taxes as well that are going to phase in. And that is why the revenue is expected to be not quite where it has been.
Also last week, State Auditor Rob Sand, the only Democrat in a statewide office, issued a report saying the more than $1 billion deal the U of I put together in March of 2020 for the operation of its utility system is a really bad deal.
Yes, and this is one, Rob Sand had to work hard for this. Initially, when he tried to get information from the University of Iowa, they wouldn't respond to the state auditor's office request for some of the information, and he had to issue a subpoena. The state auditor's office has subpoena power for their financial investigations, and the University of Iowa resisted that. And this was a battle that Rob Sand took all the way up to the Iowa Supreme Court, which issued a unanimous decision saying that the University of Iowa can't keep details about this utilities deal secret from the auditor's office. So this is a big deal. This is something that the former president, Bruce Harreld, engineered before he left. It's a massive front-loaded deal where the utility system that the university owned is leased for 50 years to a private company, and the private company gave the university a bunch of money up front that the university can use to offset some expenses. But over time, what the university has to pay this private company is going to increase over the next 50 years. And there's no guarantee that this endowment that they created with this lump sum the university got at the beginning, there's no guarantee that endowment is going to keep up with that. And so that's what the state auditor's concern is that taxpayers could end up being on the hook if the university has escalating expenses and nobody knows what's going to happen in the stock market or how this fund is going to be invested and whether they get a good return on it. And the state auditor's report mentioned that this is something the legislature might want to consider, whether the funding for state universities is sufficient. If universities are going to deals like this, perhaps they're not getting a sustainable level of state funding.
All right, just in time for the holiday week, this week and next week, the coronavirus rate in Iowa going up. Here we are, we're going to have a lot of family gatherings, a lot of parties, and things are not looking good in terms of that virus and other viruses just blowing through Iowa.
Yeah, and it's cold and it's going to get even colder. So people are going to be indoors in close quarters. But yes, the hospitalizations are up. And I've been looking, again, as I mentioned last week, I've been looking at the wastewater levels because the number of new cases is not that accurate when so many people are doing at-home tests and not reporting it. But the wastewater, for instance, in Cedar Rapids, it's just continued to go up and up since Thanksgiving, which is not too surprising. So many people got together over Thanksgiving. And it's just a really tough time. Hospitals, the Des Moines Register had a report last week about the strain, particularly in smaller hospitals now, not just because of COVID, but also because of flu and RSV cases. And so now would be a really good time for people to be wearing a mask indoors when they're in a public space. And anybody who hasn't gotten a flu shot or a COVID booster, it's not too late to get one.
And the Biden administration is again making free coronavirus tests available to all households. They are available through covidtests.gov. Let me spell that. It's one word, covidtests, covidtests.gov. Meanwhile, while all of this is going on, Governor Reynolds joined 24 other Republican governors in calling on the president to end the federally declared coronavirus public health emergency.
Yes, most Republican governors have ended the public health emergency in their own states, and Governor Reynolds did that almost a year ago in February, and now they are wanting the federal government to end that. You might wonder why it matters. These declarations, at this point, nobody has a mask mandate or a lockdown or anything like that, but these emergency declarations matter for things like food assistance in the states that still have an emergency proclamation going. And in particular, what these governors are concerned about is that more people are eligible for Medicaid, and they say that's costing their states a lot of money. So to phrase it a different way, if the federal government ends the public health emergency, a lot of people who are on Medicaid right now are going to lose access to it. And I wanted to mention one other thing because Representative Randy Feenstra in the House posted today on social media that he's working with some other Republicans in the House to try to keep a policy going, that's a policy at the border that allows the United States to deport COVID-positive immigrants. And that's something that Republicans sort of paradoxically, while they want to end the public health emergency as a matter of federal policy, they want to preserve the policy that allows them to turn immigrants away at the border who are COVID-19 positive.
All right. If it seems as if we've been kind of zooming through this evening, we have been for a reason. As I said off the top of this broadcast, this is our 99th episode of Capital Week. We first went on the air on February 1st, 2021. And this is how the first seconds of that first program sounded.
Good evening. It is 7 o'clock in the Midwest, and this is KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week for Monday, February 1st. I'm Dennis Hart, welcoming you to the first in a series of programs in this time slot that will explore and analyze what's going on in Iowa's state capital, legislation that's in the works, legislation that could be in the works, and what it all means for all of us. I'll be joined each week by Laura Beelan of the must-read political blog site Bleeding Heartland. We'll be here.
All right. Well, Laura, I have to explain. Yes, I mispronounced your name off the top of that broadcast. I am embarrassed by that. You kindly did not tell me that I mispronounced until after the show. But in my defense, As you know, Laura, you and I went on the air the day after the election in November of 2020. We never knew each other, never met each other. We were just talking. And that's after which Ursula Rudenberg came up with the idea of us doing this broadcast, which didn't go on the air for another couple of months. So, Laura, I mispronounced your name, and I will never be able to live that one down.
Oh, Dennis, it happens so often, and I felt that I was largely to blame, because usually when I do a radio interview, I remember to tell the person or the producer beforehand that even though my name only has one L in it, it is pronounced as if there were two L's, like Bellin. So it happens so often, I didn't worry about it at all. I just wanted to mention it after the show so that it didn't happen again the next week.
Well, I have to tell you, neither Laura or I knew exactly what we were going to be doing. We had a format, and it's in front of us right now. We brought back our format from that first show. But we evolved it week by week. You know, we have a different open now, a slightly different wording on the open, and much more in depth. But here were the first words I said after I mispronounced your name. I said, so much was taking place last week in the legislature, it was almost difficult to keep up with it. And the first thing we talked about, the first thing, Laura, was the House taking up, passing a constitutional amendment to protect that, saying the state constitution does not protect a woman's right to an abortion. That was 2 years ago.
Yes, almost 2 years ago now. And the House passed it right before our show. The Iowa Senate passed it a couple months later. And so we're going to see this coming year whether the Republican-controlled legislature passes it again. They both chambers would need to approve the identical language again to get that on the ballot for 2023 or 2024. This is the amendment that its supporters call an abortion neutrality amendment. They say that it would just make the Iowa Constitution neutral on the subject of abortion. And opponents say that it opens the door to an abortion ban, because if there is language in the Constitution that says no right to an abortion is protected, that would mean the legislature and the governor can regulate abortion in to any degree, including an outright ban.
So we're going to go down briefly some of this format from 2 years ago. Skipping down just a little bit, Laura, we said both the Iowa House, and this is again February 1st, 2021, both the Iowa House and Senate voted in favor of a state constitutional amendment protecting the right to keep and bear arms, and things have happened since then.
Yes, this was something that really it should have been on the ballot in the 2020 election. The Secretary of State's office made a mistake in 2018. They didn't publish the text in enough newspapers before the election. So instead of being passed twice by the legislature, this gun amendment had to be passed three times. The third time was last year. And in fact, last month, Iowa voters did overwhelmingly approve adding that language about the right to keep and bear arms to the Iowa Constitution. It means that any and all restrictions on firearms ownership or use or possession are subject to what's called strict scrutiny. And I anticipate in the coming year, we're probably going to see some litigation challenging some of the laws Iowa has on the books right now related to firearms.
Another thing we talked about on that first broadcast, we said the legislature had passed a bill and the governor had signed it, giving Iowa school districts until February 15th, 2021, to offer a choice of 100% in-person class attendance for students. Now, the coronavirus pandemic was just blowing up across the country and in Ames and in Iowa, and the governor was in this tremendous battle with school districts, including the Des Moines School District. Thus, the legislature acted.
And it was difficult because the vaccine was just becoming available. But as of the beginning of February 2021, mostly healthcare workers and people in nursing homes were most of the people who had had access to the vaccine. There were other groups, including teachers, who were going to be cleared, but the vaccine supplies weren't substantial enough to reach all of the people in the high-risk groups. And so the teachers' unions were really upset about this because they only had a couple of weeks to get ready for 100% in-person instruction, and there was no time for most of them to get vaccinated, even to get one shot, let alone two shots, by the time all of the kids would be back in school.
And again, what we're talking about is our show from 2 years ago, because this is our 99th broadcast. We're talking about our very first one. And another thing we talked about that Monday night was that the state Senate had passed a bill the week before expanding state support for certain students who want to attend a non-public or charter school or transfer to a different school district, a fight that is going to go on next year because the governor still hasn't won it to her satisfaction.
And it's interesting because at the time that we discussed it, we didn't get into this on the show, but I heard rumors that in the House there was more resistance to this idea than the Senate. But I was thinking that the Iowa House might pass a different version of the plan, but I really had no idea that it was a fairly substantial Republican majority in the Iowa House. So I didn't anticipate that it would be so difficult for the governor to get this voucher bill through the Iowa House. But as you say, it didn't pass in 2021, didn't pass in 2022, and that'll be one of the governor's top priorities next year.
One of the stories you had broken just before our broadcast was involving Governor Reynolds authorizing using state resources to conduct coronavirus tests at a workplace that had only one confirmed case after the company's owners reached out to her last May. That was a big story for you.
It was. It was a story I worked on for more than 6 months. I got a tip pretty early on in May of 2020, that there had been one of these strike teams, a state-funded strike team involving the National Guard that was going around at some corporations and some nursing homes to do testing. And they had done this. This was a corporation where the majority owner, it's somebody who was very well connected, a major donor to the governor. And later, late in 2020, I was able to, through the public records law, I was able to get some records showing that the people from that company told the local public health that they had reached out to the governor's office directly. Normally, those strike teams were only being approved for workplaces that had very large outbreaks like meatpacking plants. This was one that only had one confirmed case. So in any case, the state auditor's office announced a day or two after I broke that story that there was going to be an audit. The results of that audit investigation have still not been published. So maybe sometime in the coming year, we're going to find out what the state auditors were able to discover related to this COVID-19 testing at workplaces.
And very quickly, another story we talked about that night 2 years ago was that the governor's administration had arranged coronavirus testing for workers at an office of a big pork company whose owners were among her top donors.
Yes, and this was a big story that Ryan Foley of the Associated Press broke. And Iowa Select, a very major pork producer, and the owners are among the largest donors to Governor Reynolds' campaign. And this strike team was not testing people on like the floor, the cutting room floor of a meatpacking plant where there really were a lot of large outbreaks, but this was testing at corporate headquarters in West Des Moines. So that was why it was very questionable why. And also those corporate headquarters were located pretty close to one of the Test Iowa testing sites. So why was a strike team deployed? And again, this is something that may be part of the state audit investigation. We don't know because other than announcing that they're doing a state audit, they never release any more details until the report is published. But I imagine that that may be something that's discussed in the state audit report.
All of this, what we reported 2 years ago in our first broadcast. Laura, does it seem possible we've been doing this for 2 years?
Almost 2 years, yeah. February of 2021. Well, at the time, we weren't sure whether the show would continue beyond the 2021 legislative session, but I knew that we'd always have plenty of Iowa politics to talk about as long as KHOI was interested in putting us on the air.
Well, I'll tell you what, next week is our 100th show, also our last program of this calendar year. So we're going to look back at the first part of this year. What did we say on our first broadcast this year? Are you willing, ready, and able to do that one?
I'm going to listen to it again. I don't think we were too far off, though. I mean, I feel that there weren't that many big surprises this year.
Two words for you, bottle bill.
Bottle bill. Speaking of things we're never going to live down.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, I know now that your name is Laura Bellin, and you know mine is Dennis Hart. We have about 45 seconds left. It's Hanukkah week, and it's Christmas week coming up. What do you have a message for our listeners?
Oh, well, I hope that everyone has a safe and healthy holiday season and enjoys some rest and time off. And again, if you're in crowded indoor spaces, it would be a good idea to mask up right now.
Everybody, this is Christmas week. I hope you have the happiest of holidays. I hope your family is peaceful. I hope your world is peaceful and that you are in good health. And you'll be back with us next week. We'll be back the night after Christmas. Laura, you have a great holiday.
You too, Dennis.
Okay, we're out of time. You've been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Yes, Laura and I will be back next week in the same time slot, next Monday night. The night after Christmas, when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about our politics Iowa style, we hope you can join us. Until then, we thank you so very, very much for the privilege of your time. We really appreciate it. We have every show we've done this year, every week. Thank you. We value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a great, great holiday week. Merry Christmas. And happy Hanukkah, everybody.